Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Q3 Update Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, during which, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that this conference is being recorded today, February 9th, 2016. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Nick Bray, CFO. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our third quarter trading statement. My name is Nick Bray, CFO of Sophos, and I'm joined by our CEO, Chris Hageman. I will now take a few moments to give you a brief overview of today's announcement before opening up the call to questions. We delivered another strong quarter with good growth across all regions. We continue to grow faster than the market in our major product categories of network and end user. Like-for-like billings grew by 17.4% to just over $141 million as compared to the same quarter last year. On a reported basis, billings grew by 10.6%, reflecting significant devaluation of the euro and sterling against the dollar. Cash EBITDA of $34.8 million increased by 16.3% on a constant currency basis, 5.5% as reported at actual exchange rates. The average contract length increased marginally from 28 months in the prior year to 28.5 months, following a small number of longer-term deals in Japan. In the quarter, we were also pleased to complete the acquisition of Surfrite, a leader in next-generation endpoint security. This acquisition enables to further enhance the effectiveness of our synchronized security strategy. Now let me turn to our outlook statement. At the time of our first half results announcement, we upgraded our full-year outlook for like-for-like billings growth to be in the range of high teens to 20% and cash EBITDA margins to be slightly in excess of the 21.3% achieved in the prior year. After an encouraging third quarter, with continued strong demand for our products across all regions and major product groups, we are pleased to reaffirm this guidance. Thank you very much for listening. We will now open the call to questions.
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel the request, please press pound or the hash key.
Okay, Operator, would you like to take the first question from Adam Wood?
Hey, good morning, Chris. Good morning, Nick. Congratulations on another good quarter there. Just got two questions, please. Just first of all, on the guidance. So if we back out the fourth quarter billings from that, we're down to probably a sort of high single-digit billings growth number. It's obviously a slowdown from Q3. Just linking this in, there's obviously some concerns out there on the macro environment. Are there any concerns from your point of view in terms of what you're seeing with customers, any change in behavior given those macro concerns, or are customers behaving pretty much as you'd expect and relatively immune from that given, you know, security spending rather than more discretionary spend? And then secondly, just on the margins as we look through to the end of the year as well, obviously year to date those cash EBITDA margins have been down a little bit. We've got a big improvement in the fourth quarter. But there was a spending on marketing in the base period which helps that. But just to kind of reassure us, there's no plans for one-off marketing or spending, that the phasing is exactly as you expect, and you're kind of comfortable with that improvement in fourth quarter margins. Thank you.
Sure, thanks, Adam. Well, so the first thing to say is you know, we're pleased with continued strong billings growth, and we're absolutely comfortable with reaffirming our guidance for like-for-like billings growth in the range of high teens to 20%. As you rightly point out, if you look at the growth last year, in the quarterly progression, we had 9% Q1, 16% Q2, 18% Q3, and 24% Q4. Now this year that's been followed by 25% Q1, 24% Q2, and 17% Q3. So this is the first quarter where we've had, if you like, consistent growth between the two quarters. But of course we've got a tougher comp in Q4 last year at 24%. But we're well ahead of the guidance we established at the IPO, and we knew that as we entered H2 we'd be working with kind of tougher year-on-year comparables. But again, we see no change in market dynamics. We see you know, confidence for the future and a good way going forward. And I'll just cover the margin point, Adam, and then hand over to Chris to see if Chris has got any other points. On the margin point you rightly raised, again, you look to margins. Whilst we're ahead of last year, you know, we've gone out there with a strong statement that we're confident that we will exceed the margins of last year, 21.3. But as you rightly pointed out, we had quite a significant level of marketing spend in Q4 last year. Now, in fact, if you look at our cash EBITDA in Q4 last year, Q3 was $33 million, Q4 was $26.6. So whereas actually we've got a tougher comp on billings growth at 24%, we actually have, you know, a much easier comp on our profit compared to the prior year, which is why we've got a very high level of confidence that for the full year our margins will be higher than last year. Chris, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Yeah, very quickly. I think you captured it very well, Nick. I mean, the only thing I would add is a comment on the macro environment. And as Nick says, we just don't really see any change to the overall climate for security spend, which we see as continuing to be very robust. You know, we continue to outgrow the market in both end-user security and network security. And the two core components of our business, you know, about three-quarters of our business comes from our existing customers, a quarter comes from new, brand-new customers to Sophos. And our kind of core operating metrics are improving in both of those. So we feel very good about the performance in Q3, and we also feel good about where we're heading for Q4, albeit it will be operating against tougher compares on a year-over-year basis.
That's pretty helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
And your next question comes from the line of Alexander Mees with JPM.
Morning, gentlemen. Couple of questions from me, please. Just firstly, echoing a point that Chris just made about taking market share, I wonder if you could give us any color as to what is driving that. What do you see as your point of difference at the moment that's allowing you to take share so successfully, particularly in the US? And secondly, I wonder if there's anything at all you can update us on Security Heartbeat as to what the customer response has been so far.
Chris, perhaps you'd like to start?
Yeah, sure. So on the share question, I don't think there's anything that is different than what we articulated at the time of the IPO or in our half-year statement. You know, we are in the middle and in a leadership position in one of the largest, fastest-growing segments in all of IT, which is IT security. Within that broader kind of market and that broad kind of high, fast-rising tide, we take a particularly, we think, unique approach. Number one, to focus not on the global 2,000 or the global 5,000, but the other 50 or 60 million mid-market enterprises. Number two, we have this unique product strategy of really focusing on delivering a complete security portfolio that delivers enterprise-grade security, but done in a way that is simple and easy to use and easy to manage. Third, we are doing something that really no other security vendor has really accomplished to date, which is to be a leader in both the end-user security segment and the network security segment. And with the announcement of synchronized security and this security heartbeat, we now have the chance to actually combine those in a way to deliver both better security and better manageability. And then finally, as you know, we have a 100% channel-first sales model, which continues to give us leverage and continues to give us scale without having to kind of grow our own direct sales organization in the same kind of with the same kind of magnitude. So those same attributes we continue to invest in, we continue to get better and better at every month, every quarter, every year, and we just don't see any other vendor with the same kind of focus and commitment that we have to either that product strategy or to that go-to-market strategy and that customer segment focus. With respect to synchronized security, we're very pleased with the start that we're off to. So we launched in November the SG firewall. So that's what enables synchronized security on the network side. And even in just a few months now, that new SG series is representing about 15% of our total network appliance sales, and we expect that will continue to ramp and grow. So we're very happy with that trajectory. And on the endpoint side, the Sophos Cloud endpoint is what enables synchronized security on the end user security side, and we now have well over 10,000 Sophos Cloud customers. So we see strong adoption on kind of both sides of the aisle, if you will. So we're very happy with the start. And I would also comment that the feedback and the reaction we've had from our customers and our channel partners all over the world has been extremely encouraging. I mean, there's just a lot of excitement around this prospect of having endpoint and network security actually communicate with each other in a way that delivers better security and better usability at the same time. So, and that, I think, is translating into some of the robust growth that we're seeing, not just with our existing customer base, but we're seeing quite strong growth that's actually outpacing our overall growth in the rate that we're growing our new customers.
That's very kind. Thank you very much.
And your next question comes from the line of Michael Briest with UBS.
Good morning, thanks. I think at the first half results, you revealed that 6.4% of customers had both UTM and end user or network and end user solutions. Can you give us an update on that? And then in terms of UTM growth specifically, H1 it was 42%. Is that something you can carve out from the 30% of this quarter? And then just finally on the legal settlement, is there any sort of numerical value you can attribute to that or anything else you can say about that? Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. Well, why don't I take those, Chris? So we haven't disclosed the number in Q3, Michael, but we will do it at the year end for the customers that have got both UTM and endpoint. You're absolutely right. It was 6.4% at the half year, but that just continues to edge up slightly, as you saw at the half year. So again, which is what we would expect. We would expect of that, you know, we've got 200,000 customers. In time, that customer base to gradually start taking both products as we improve our cross-sell, and that's what we continue to see. You know, UTM, we haven't broken out the UTM growth rate in the statement, but again, the UTM is the majority of our network product set, if you like, the other core products being web and email. And again, just continued strong growth in UTM, the UTM products are quite, honestly, as we've seen for years now. So again, just good continuation in the UTM product line. And then on the legal settlement, we didn't disclose a figure when we announced that prior to the quarter. And I think it would be inappropriate, as we haven't disclosed it right now, because we will come back to that at the year end when we break out exceptional items. So we'll come back and cover that at the year end.
Okay, thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of David Tom with Numis.
Hi guys, well done on a decent quarter. You may have to duck this in the same way that you ducked Michael's question on the settlement, Nick, but I did want to ask about free cash flow in Q3, since that's such an important metric for all of us when evaluating the business. We also get quite a lot of one-off or hopefully non-repeating working capital exceptionals and so on in the first half, which we were hoping wouldn't repeat in H2. Obviously, we've got the legal settlement, but is there anything else beyond that that's going to impact free cash flow in H2? And can you give us an idea overall of what you think the total impact, without necessarily splitting out the legal settlement, what the total impact of one of five items will be in H2?
Well, as you say, it's a little bit difficult to answer specifically because we haven't put details in the statement, although we'll give full details at the year end. I mean, perhaps the way to answer that, David, is to look at what you and your colleagues have assumed for this year and then kind of broadly for next year, just kind of answer in that sort of context. So you're absolutely right. When we stand back and look at the numbers for this year, at IPO and since updated with our improved outlook, then what the market has assumed and then what we've kind of further clarified with the outlook statement at half one was billings growth, high teens to 20%. Slight improvement of margin, which we're seeing, therefore, profit growth. But, as you rightly pointed out, cash flow broadly similar year on year, because last year we had some one-off significant items, particularly marketing spend towards the end of the quarter, which I already mentioned, depressed our Q4 profit, which we had the accounting entry in the P&L last year, but of course that's only been paid for this year. And that was around the marketing investment and higher bonuses and some other items which we've already talked about in depth. So those are the things that were broadly holding back, if you like, cash growth this year whilst billings and profits were growing. Now, of course, as you look forward, what people have been assuming is that, of course, we don't have that headwind going forward. And of course, people have got their assumptions around billings growth and profit growth next year. But, of course, we don't have that headwind of the working capital, the negative working capital hit this year. So everyone is assuming consensus that cash flow will grow even stronger than that for next year. So I think that is a question to hold for the year end. That the one change since the IPO is a Fortinet settlement. But again, we'll give full disclosure on exceptional items, and I'm sure that will help clarify this year, which you can already see is positive from our outlook statement, but also help kind of guide people into next year. And we'll cover that when we come back to the full year results at the end of May.
Okay, thanks. And then kind of a couple other quick ones. The longer duration deals in Japan, were those particularly skewed towards endpoint or network? And on the product front, well done getting XG Firewall out there. There's been quite a lot of customer commentary about, at the moment, the lack of availability of an upgrade path for most of your customers from SG to XG. Can you tell us exactly when you're expecting the kind of the one press simple upgrade path to be available for customers?
Sure. So I'll answer the first part and then hand to the second part. But for the longer duration contracts in Japan, they were network deals. So in the main were network deals. Now what I would say on the XG, as Chris pointed out earlier, entirely as expected. But Chris, why don't I hand to you to talk about the product roadmap and the upgrade path for all customers rather than just this first version that we've released.
Thanks, David. The approach that we've taken with the XG Firewall is that we introduced this new platform and we decided to continue both the existing Sophos UTM Next-Gen Firewall, which is the SG platform, as well as the CyberRoam existing UTM. So we're in effect continuing sort of three product lines in parallel. And we'll continue to do that and continue to enhance both the original Sophos UTM and the original CyberRoam UTM so that we give customers a very smooth, sort of seamless upgrade path. As far as the migrations, we felt that we are introducing migration tools, but the most compelling sort of timing for that to take place will be when the XG platform is sort of a full superset of the capabilities of the Sophos UTM and the CyberRoam UTM. That will happen with version 2 of the release, which will be coming out later this year.
Thanks. So is there a specific timing on the later this year?
No, there isn't.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
And your next question comes from the line of Rob Owens with Pacific Crest Securities.
Good early morning, guys. So a couple questions on the endpoint front. Surfrite acquisition, help me understand how that integration is going, when we should see enhanced product from that. Is there any contribution there? I realize it was only 15 days in the December quarter, but as you look at the March quarter, is there nominal contribution? And then I guess secondarily, as I look at the endpoint business, obviously has not paced with the network business, as that market has yet to take off, but early indications of inflection there, just some color would be great. Thank you.
Okay, well, why don't I start with the numbers, Rob, and then Chris can kind of add some color around the Surfrite integration on the product side. So as you rightly pointed out, no material contribution whatsoever in Q3 for Surfrite and Surfrite numbers. In terms of endpoint, so you know, you talk about not keeping pace with the network product. Well, the network product growth was, you know, continues to be very strong now, and the end user growth slightly below that we saw in H1, around 8%. But what I would say there is actually if you, and we'll break this out once we get to the year end. The growth in brand new customers was substantially stronger than that 8%. The growth this quarter from the existing customer base was you know, a little bit lower, just purely due to the timing of renewals in the quarter. So the number of renewals up in this quarter compared to other quarters. So as we look at that 8% growth, actually we view it as very encouraging because, as I say, the actual growth of brand new customers, a significant multiple of that 8%, driven by our cloud products. I think Chris mentioned earlier, 10,000 customers now on cloud, you know, server, mobile, a number of good things driving growth. And as we saw in the first half year, and as we, you know, and actually as we expect to see going forward, you know, we are seeing good growth in brand new customers, and a growth in our renewal base, and a modest improvement in our renewal rate, and all three of those are very healthy for the future, but end user, and very similar trends on network. So Chris, with that leading, why don't I hand to you to just talk about the Surfrite technology piece?
Yeah, Surfrite for us is a very exciting combination with Sophos because they bring some complementary next-gen endpoint technologies that we think are a great fit for Sophos. We've already had a number of releases over the last few quarters of next-gen endpoint technology of our own, capabilities like download reputation and malicious traffic detection that take some of the innovations that we've developed even on the network side and apply them on the endpoint. What Surfrite does, and they've been at this for quite a while, it's a small team in the Netherlands, relatively small, revenue company, so it doesn't really have any material impact on Sophos overall from a billings perspective. But the technology is a very interesting fit because they have some pretty advanced capabilities in anti-exploit technologies and zero-day attacks, and it's all signatureless. So it's a very nice complement to what we're already doing. We have those integration efforts actively underway. We haven't announced the timing of when we would actually fully integrate the product and offer a Sophos branded version of the Surfrite product. What we haven't announced is that we will continue the Surfrite product as they are. They have had millions of downloads of Hitman Pro, the free offering. And they also have thousands of paying customers as well. So we have mentioned that we will be integrating Surfrite into Sophos overall, but we haven't yet announced the timeline for that. And I mean, it will be this year for sure, but we haven't pinned it down just yet.
So does the Surfrite capability then, is that an overlay to your pre-existing capability, or does that get integrated into the base level product, number one? And as a follow-up, number two, as we talk about that renewal cycle that's coming, how do you increase monetization with those customers? Do you see better pricing? Is it incremental seats? Or are there other things that are going to drive growth there? Thanks.
Yeah, for Surfrite itself, we think there are two opportunities. One is to enhance our overall endpoint, and so we will take that as an opportunity to go into, you know, a significant installed base of over 100,000 endpoint customers and sell them a more advanced capability on the endpoint. The other capabilities that Surfrite, though, has is the ability to sort of operate in tandem or in parallel with other competitive anti-malware and antivirus solutions. So for other customers that have competitive antivirus offerings, without switching out their entire antivirus, we can actually have the Surfrite product actually run in parallel and provide advanced threat detection and anti-exploit capability. So it's both an opportunity to go out to our existing customer base and an opportunity to go out to a completely greenfield base of customers and basically acquaint them with Suffolk's technology and create an initial relationship. In terms of additional monetization, there are several paths we're taking. It's not so much in pricing. I mean, pricing has stayed pretty pretty constant, really no meaningful impact there. But we have the opportunity for more seats, and we certainly have the opportunity for both cross-sell and upsell. Cross-selling with, so for example, when we sell a endpoint to an existing or a new customer, we have the chance to sell both additional products within the end user security portfolio, like server security or server lockdown that locks down the actual server implementation. We can sell mobile security, we can sell encryption, and then of course we have the opportunity to sort of jump across to the other aisle and sell that customer a variety of network security capabilities as well, whether it's the UTM and next-gen firewall, or web security, or email security, or Wi-Fi. So all those opportunities exist, and it's one of the core reasons why we're not only generating strong kind of new customer growth, but when we look at our renewal rates and our billings growth with existing customers, we see those renewal rates and the sort of monetization of our existing customer base, those metrics continue to march up.
Thank you for the color.
Yep.
And your next question comes from the line of Alex Tout with Deutsche Bank.
Hi, guys. Congrats on a good quarter. Thanks for taking the question. Just on the partner metrics, can you give us an update there? You know, total numbers, blue chip partners, any new geographies? And do you continue to see the operating leverage as a percentage of billings on the sales and marketing line that you saw in the first half going into the second half? And then secondly, total switch of questioning to a big picture one on the public cloud AWS side. Are you seeing your SMB customer base moving particularly rapidly over to that? And how do you feel about your opportunity there? Which products specifically are you monetizing? Is there any change in the revenue recognition versus on-premise? And do you see the same competitive set?
Okay, so quite a few questions there, Alex. Why don't I take the partner metrics leverage and then the kind of the RevRec piece, and Chris, you talk about the impact of AWS. So partner metrics we haven't disclosed. You know, we will, I'm sure, talk about that at the full year. But I mean, as you'd expect and as we've seen for quite some time, just a continuing, you know, positive movement in terms of both total numbers of partners and an increase in our blue chips, which is, you know, it's that partner stroke channel focus, which is really driving growth. In terms of continuing to see operating leverage between sales and marketing, absolutely. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that certainly year on year, you're going to see a significant improvement because, of course, last year we put all of, in Q4, we had all of the investment into marketing in Q4, which is why our Q4 cash EBITDA was, you know, depressed to $26.6 million. You know, and mentioned earlier, we've got that as an easier compare. And so we absolutely will see leverage in the second half year. But also going forward, as we've talked about, you know, I mean, our own internal model is that we anticipate growing marketing broadly in line with billings growth and be able to leverage our sales costs, you know, sales performance, again, because of all the investment that we've made in the channel over the last kind of 4 or 5 years now. In terms of In terms of the rev rec of AWS, well, no impact whatsoever because, again, our model, you know, for a very long period of time is the vast majority of our billings are subscription-based, not hardware-based, and those get recognized over the term of the contract. And when we do when we do business with AWS, that's exactly the same. It's subscription-based, so those billings, you know, flow through to revenue in the same way as any other subscription. So no change there. But perhaps, Chris, you'd just like to talk about the strategic piece of, you know, the impact of AWS on the public cloud.
Yeah, the short answer is that there's obviously a very strong trend toward virtually any organization with a data center moving more of their server infrastructure to cloud providers like AWS or Google or Azure. That, for us, is almost entirely greenfield opportunity, because we have to date had a relatively small server protection business, although it's growing quite rapidly at the moment on the heels of cloud once we sort of offered it as part of Sophos Cloud. But that's clearly a greenfield opportunity as we look forward. The main opportunity that we have today with AWS, and we're one of the leaders in providing a version of our UTM that runs entirely in software, that runs inside AWS, it's available on a rental model. So the numbers there are still pretty small. Security as a whole as an opportunity within AWS and the other cloud hosting providers is relatively small, but it's growing quickly, and we certainly see it as a pretty exciting growth opportunity for Sophos.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
And again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Again, that is star 1 on your telephone. And your next question comes from the line of Tariq Amin with Peel Hunt.
Hi, guys. Well done on the quarter. Just one very quick question in terms of your competitive position. So obviously the share price has reacted, you know, relatively poorly, and that's in line and probably worse than some of the sort of cybersecurity peers. And I just wanted to sort of clarify who you go up head-to-head against when you're competing from a product perspective, because you know, the understanding is obviously that most of the U.S. Cybersecurity companies are focused on a different end market. So it'd be useful just to know, you know, today who you do go head-to-head with and therefore whether the share price move is kind of unjustified given they're not really your true competitors in terms of the sort of U.S. cyber companies.
Chris, perhaps you'd like to take that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess my first answer would be I'm not sure that there's any correlation between who we compete at a pragmatic kind of on the ground level with on a day-to-day basis and our share price movements relative to comparables. But I'll leave that for you and others to sort out. When it comes to actually who we see in the market, that really hasn't changed much at all since the IPO or since last time we've updated the market. So on, you know, we have two really core pillars of our business. One is on the end user security side and one is on the network security side. In end user, it's really the usual suspects of Symantec, McAfee, Trend, to a lesser degree, probably Kaspersky. And then on the network security side, you know, those are, again, the leaders in UTM in particular and next-gen firewall. So, you know, Fortinet, Checkpoint, SonicWall, Cisco, you know, Juniper, those kinds of players. So it's the same lineup that we communicated during the IPO, and that's on a day-to-day, day-in, day-out basis, it's pretty similar.
And therefore, with synchronized security, you have a differentiated product on network, and I guess how far behind or how far ahead, the other way of looking at it, do you think you are with regards to anyone else coming up with a similar type of product? Or is that something that's unlikely given most don't play in both end user and network?
Well, I think that there have been a handful of competitors who have talked about that strategy. Certainly FireEye and Palo Alto, I mean, they're much more focused on the kind of global 2000 of the large enterprise than we are. But they certainly have talked about that strategy. I think the fundamental difference, though, is that, number one, we come at it with a pretty attractive position of being a leader in both endpoint and UTM. I mean, we're the only vendor in the world that is in the Gartner leadership quadrant for both endpoint and for UTM. So the fact that we start with a strong kind of market leadership position in each of those kind of segments means a great deal. The second thing that is unique to the synchronized security approach that we're taking is that these products actually communicate directly with each other. They don't communicate sort of indirectly through a console, which is how these other competitors have tried to integrate the two. And then third, we've also built the entire kind of strategy from the ground up to be consumable and manageable by a mid-market enterprise. So an organization that doesn't have a lot of dedicated security professionals, doesn't have the ability to invest or build that team, the whole thing is designed to be fast and easy and simple and to really surface only the issues that really make a difference without requiring somebody to kind of page through, you know, screen after screen after screen of alerts and logs. So that's really what we think differentiates our vision of synchronized security from some of the other approaches.
That's great. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. I think we've got time for one more question, operator.
And the next question comes from Eoin Lam with Liberum.
Hi. Good morning. It's Eoin. Two questions, if I could. Firstly, just on the cash generation potential of this business. Next year, once your cash flow normalizes and the one-offs go out of it, would it be sensible to think this business can generate $90 million of free cash flow in fiscal 17, which is 2 months away? Is that a sensible number?
you know I can't answer that, and that would be a... That would be a poor case. But look, what we can say is, as you know, if you look at the as we've covered on the call today, there's a very strong market in IT security. You know, as we've pointed out, Chris has highlighted, we've got a very strong position, a leadership position with our strategy, which is unique around targeting the mid-market, complete security through the channel. We've got very good growth potential, both at the macro level and at the micro level. And the micro level being, you know, 3/4 of our billings from existing customers. We're seeing an increase in our renewal base. We're seeing an edging up of our renewal rate. And we're also seeing good growth, actually continued good growth from our brand new customers. So whether you look at from the macro level or the micro level, there's lots of reasons for us to feel confident about growth. We've talked about how we can leverage the margin. Again, right from the IPO, we've said the aim is not to significantly leverage the margin. We're looking for a balance between, you know, good billings growth and margin progression. And we've already in the outlook statement talked about our confidence about improving the margin this year from 20 to 1.3 to a level slightly higher than that. And we've already talked on this call about how we've got an easier Q4 compare because of the marketing spend last year. Again, we've got a high degree of confidence that this year's margin will improve. We've also talked in other sessions around why would that margin could continue to improve. So, for example, we'll keep development growing in line with billings. It's important that we keep innovating. We don't need to grow development costs faster than billings growth, but at the rate of billings growth. Same with marketing, but we'll be able to leverage sales, support, and back office. All of those would give, you know, some modest margin expansion. Now, if you take all of that combined, a strong macro position with the market, strong micro, you know, if you like, individual conditions within the company about our renewal rates, et cetera, et cetera, the ability to leverage, and as we talked about earlier, the fact that this year we've had a headwind on cash flow because of this, if you like, the high negative working capital which will unwind, then you put all of that together, there is good reason to believe that actually our cash flow could improve next year, certainly beyond this year, because of all those things combined. Now, saying that, we've got to focus, we've got to deliver, but we have strong confidence in our market, in our ability to execute, in our strategy, and that's what we intend to do. And all of those, if executed as we expect, would be expected to lead to business growth, profit growth, and cash growth. And so, you know, so we believe we're in a good situation.
Okay. Thanks. And then just on the demand side amongst the different market segments, do you think the mid-market companies, your customer base, are accelerating spending faster than the larger enterprises, or have larger enterprises been spending very rapidly over the last 3 years? I'm just trying to figure out, is the mid-market kind of a better place to be at the moment?
Chris, perhaps you could take that one and we'll then we'll...
Yeah, I'd be happy to take that one. I don't know that the third-party analysts and industry analyst assessments are terribly helpful here. Most of what I've seen have pegged the mid-market as growing slightly faster, that the demand for security in the mid-market growing slightly faster than that in the large enterprise. But the truth is, it's strong in both of them. I mean, security continues to be the number one priority for CIOs and IT administrators of every size organization. And so I think that the mid-market continues to be a very strong segment for us to focus on. I don't know that it's stronger than the enterprise. It might be marginally stronger, but the truth is, certainly from the vantage point that we have into our customer base and into our partner base, the overall kind of systemic tide in security continues to be strong and robust, and we don't see any slowdown at all.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. And at that point, I'm afraid there's no time for further questions, so we'll bring the call to a close. But thank you for your time today, and we'll speak to you shortly. Thanks very much.
And that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect. Presenters, stay on the line.